Hello and welcome to the Blue Toon Podcast, your weekly unofficial podcast dedicated to all things Peterhead FC. The Blue Toon Podcast is sponsored by Marcos Chipper. You canna beat the scran, doing it Marcos. On the podcast this week is former Blue Toon player Keith Robertson. Keith spent 2.5 years at Balmoor in the early 2000s, where he started on the path to where his media work now takes him to all parts of the world and attends some of the biggest football events on the planet.
Okay, pleased to say former Peterhead player Keith Robertson is with us. Keith, how are you?
Doing great, thank you. Really pleased to be on. Great to look back. Looking forward to it.
I hope so. So how has lockdown been for you? Have you been able to do any work in that kind of period?
Lockdown's been different, yeah, for sure. I've been working throughout since March, and it's been a challenge, but an enjoyable one at the same. So, yeah, hasn't been that bad. But I'm looking forward to getting back to work.
We'll come on to your career post football later, because it's quite a fascinating kind of story how it came about. So. Interesting to see that, but a keen golfer as well, so pleased to get back onto the golf course as well.
I am, yeah, I'm delighted to get back. I'm a massive golfer now. I never used to be. It used to all be about football, but yeah, I've got that bug. When you hear people talking about the golf bug, I've definitely got it, and I think I've got that competitiveness from my football because I just want to be better, and it frustrates me that I'm not as good as I think I am. But it's good. I play a course where there's a few Highland League players that play there, and there's quite a strong football community. So it's always good to talk about how good we thought we were when we were players. So yeah, enjoy the golf. Really love it.
Of course, that competitive edge will be interesting in the actual competitions you play in that as well. Try to still outdo each other.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we all try and pretend that it doesn't matter, but it absolutely does matter. And, you know, if you see somebody missing one of those putts and it means that you beat them, then it absolutely matters. So, yeah, that competitive streak never leaves you.
Internally, you're doing cartwheels, but the exterior, you're going, oh, it's a mess, I mess.
Yeah. What a shame. So, unlucky.
Given that. What handicap are you playing off of?
I'm playing off 7 at the moment, so yeah, I started at 21 when I gave up football, so you can see that I took it pretty seriously. So yeah, I do enjoy it. I try and get out as much as I can during the summer, but I don't play in the winter.
How often would you say you do get out, Keith, to get around the golf?
I like to play the odd weekend. There's a few outings that I'm involved in with friends that we have Ryder Cup, like fake Ryder Cups and things like that, and just fun outings. And I try in the summertime when it's, you know, the lighter nights to try and get a game after work, but it's becoming less and less likely with the weather we have at the moment. So yeah, it looks like I'll be playing at the weekend, but yeah, really enjoy it.
Do you get to play much courses? Do you go out and visit other courses around the country?
I do, yeah, I do like to go around. I like to play an open. I like to go around and see some of the courses everybody talks about. And, you know, I love going and playing at Cruden Bay. I was up at Castle Stewart not long ago, which was brilliant. It was the hottest day of the year pretty much on that day, so we melted pretty much all the way around. But it was really enjoyable, and I managed to beat my brother as well, which was really, really rewarding. He's also a former ex-Peterhead player, those of you can remember.
So
yeah, I do.
So I was about to say, the sibling rivalry never dies either then?
No, it's probably the strongest, especially on the golf course, because we didn't play against each other that often, but when we did play against each other, he beat me in a Highland League Cup final, which he always likes to try and remind me of. So every opportunity that I get to beat him on a golf course, I take. So, but he took the one at Castle Stewart quite well. I mean, we shared the car up and down, so we had to kind of get along.
You had no other option, really, did you?
No other option, but it was good fun.
Okie doke, let's talk some football then. How and when did you start playing?
Well, I mean, I just started when I was a young boy, like pretty much everybody else. You know, my dad was a massive football fan, and he'd taken teams, and it was just one of those where me and my brother, we always just played football. We always had a ball at our feet, and we were always out in the street playing, and we just lived in a street where kids were around playing football. And my dad was always taking us out and practicing, and it was, for me, that was just the only thing to do. You know, there was no computers, there was no internet and stuff like that. It was, here's a ball, go and play. And you played cuppy, or you played against other kids in the street, and that's how you honed your talent. You know, you would go in goals for a bit, you would play up front, you'd play defence, you know, you would just go and do different things. And I just loved it. I mean, I just loved football. I still love football. I watch as much football as I can, and just playing was just amazing. And I just wished, I know everybody says this, but I wished at the time I realised how lucky I was playing, because having stopped playing now, I realise how good it was playing in successful teams and having all that really good teammates around. And you miss a dressing room and things like that. But I got into it really early and just played as much as I could all the way through school, all the way through primary, secondary, just probably played, I mean, sometimes at the weekends you would play 2 or 3 games. I mean, if you think about it now, it's just madness, but just loved it.
Did you always want to be a football player growing up?
Yeah, that was always the plan. That was always the plan. I never, ever wanted to do anything else. And I think I remember going to these career events and advisors, and they were asking you to do, you know, what are you interested in? And I think I was probably that boring kid that just said, I just want to play football. And I think at that point, everybody was like, "Ah, isn't he actually going to be a footballer?" And I was like, well, that's what I want to do. I said, I'm not interested in maths or English or anything like that. PE was what I loved, and I did as much as I could. And my route was to go and play football if I could. And if I got the opportunity to do that, then I would have. But I think as a footballer, I was probably a later developer, in terms of I wasn't one of those kids that everybody thought was going to be a footballer. I think I developed a lot later. I was fortunate enough that with my date of birth, halfway through my sort of juvenile football, it swapped. So I was then, instead of being one of the younger kids, I then automatically went to being one of the older kids in that year group. So that completely changed things. So I was playing with guys younger than me. And at that point, I was developing as a man. And I think that helped. But I think I played my better football when I got a little bit older.
You mentioned you mentioned them you playing in the streets and things like that. It's not something you see very often these days. Is that something that the kids these days are missing out on, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, the PlayStation generation, you know, that sort of at home on the Xbox, on the PlayStation, on the internet, it's just a waste of talent. And, you know, you see the fields when you're driving around, and, you know, you see the football pitches, and there's just nobody there. I become frustrated because, I mean, I live next to a school, and the council take away the football goals in the summertime when it's on the school holidays. They take them away. And that just frustrates me because, I mean, if you're a kid, you want to go and shoot and score goals, what I did. And if somebody takes away your football goals for the whole summer, then I just don't understand why you would do that. And that doesn't help us, surely, as a nation of trying to get kids back playing. But, yeah, I think kids have to get back going out and playing football with their mates, because that's how you learn.
Do you think councils need to do more to get kids back? You said they take away their goals there in the summer. It sounds like counterproductive. You know, you've got to get the kids playing, as you said, scoring goals is what they want to do. But then I got goals there, surely the council's got to do something to try and help them out.
Yeah, I thought so. I mean, I thought it was crazy. I mean, there's obviously reasons behind it. But, I mean, why would you take away goals that just stay there all year? And then when it comes to 7 or 6 weeks off holidays, you take them away. It's the same as, you know, when we went through this COVID restrictions, and, you know, they should have just opened up the AstroTurf pitches and let kids go and play. You know, instead of having them bolted up and locked and kids were trying to jump over barriers and stuff, let them go and play football. Do you know what I mean? And I think we just have to allow kids to be able to do it. And there's less green space than there was when I was playing. And you just have to let kids go and have a chance to score goals and practice. But yeah,
it comes from, I guess, the very top, and those kind of rules and restrictions and things like that should be coming from the top. And I mean, you know, local government or national government, the SFA and that kind of things as well.
Yeah, yeah, and, you know, I think these, you know, you see these, like, Dennis Law pitches they're putting in, and, you know, the Cruyff pitches, and they're absolutely fantastic. I never had them when I was a kid, and, you know, you just kind of made your own goals, but these facilities that they're putting in are fantastic. You know, they look brilliant, and it gets kids into that five-a-side mentality, or, you know, like the little sort of futsal skills that they're doing. That's only going to benefit us, I think.
Yeah, and hopefully benefit the national team as well in the long run. But go back to yourself then. Keith was your sort of first big team, shall we say. How did that come about?
Yeah, it was a strange one, actually. So Martin Allen, the manager at the time, he actually lived in the same street as me when I was a little boy. And my dad knew him. And I came to the end of my juvenile days, and I'd been playing at the school, and I didn't really have a team. And back then, the Highland League Cup used to be at the end of the season. So they basically had that little tournament at the end of the year after the league. And Martin invited me up to play for Keith. And I hadn't played in the Highland League. I never really had known a little bit of much about it. And I ended up playing all of the games. And we played Wick, and we played these teams. And I actually scored quite a few goals in that little tournament. And that kind of whetted my appetite to go and play in the Highland League. And I was only ever going to sign for Keith. That was the team. My mum grew up in Keith. That's why I'm called Keith. So it was natural that I was going to go and play for Keith. And at that point, I wasn't bothered about wages and getting paid. And, you know, I actually remember, it was a strange one, because I'd played all these games for them. I hadn't had a contract. I hadn't signed anything. And I remember thinking, Do I get paid here, or what happens? And I think I was only like 16, 17. And I remember plucking up the courage after one of the games, and I think I'd scored two or something, and we'd won. And I was also pleased with my performance. I remember plucking up the courage and speaking to Martin in the bar, and I said, "What happened? Do I get paid?" And he sort of took out this brown envelope, and he's like, "Oh yeah, sorry, this is for you." And I opened it up, and I was like, at that point, I mean, I had no job, so I looked at the money, and I was like, "Oh my God, is this actually, people are paying me to play football?" And it wasn't a lot, but at that point, it was more than anything I'd really earned. So I was delighted with that. So the following season, I went and signed for them. And it was one of those seasons where we won the league, but we were miles out of it in Christmas time. We actually went to Peterhead, and Peterhead hammered us. I mean, properly gave us a right doing. And at that point, the league was done. Everybody thought, there's no chance. And then we went on this crazy run after that. And I think we only lost one game, I think it was, in the back end of the season, and won something like 14 or 15 on the bounce, which at that point was unheard of. But we just got into the habit of winning, and we had a really strong team because everybody got on. The team spirit was amazing. And I think we were just lucky that we had some really, really good players. Like Darren Still was just incredible. Thaner was in goals. You had Gibby and Shaggy in defence. And everywhere where you looked, there was a strong team. And looking back now, and I've said this to the guys before, that was my first real team. And I wish I had really savoured that moment of being in a successful team, because I just assumed that was going to happen every year. I was going to win a league or win a cup, and that never happened for a little bit of time. And I wish that I'd realised how important it was, that, you know, there was a real culture of team spirit there. Everybody got on, everybody bonded together, everybody, we went out for a pint on Saturday, and everybody was at training, and everybody just was together. So yeah, Keith was really special. I really enjoyed my time there. Really did.
You think it was even better the fact that it was Keith, that it was your first club as well?
I think so, yeah. I think it probably was. Yeah, I mean, I'd known about Keith, and obviously my mum growing up there, it was a kind of a special club. And I think the way that it went, because we we were so successful, and I played quite well, and at that point everything was going well. I think it might have been different if we hadn't won the league and we maybe were mid-table or we were maybe struggling, but I think at that point I just thought that was normal. I just thought that this was just great. And obviously Alan Lyons, Lenny was the assistant at the time, and you know, he helped me immensely. I mean, he gave me advice, and you know, I used to pop down at lunchtimes to his office and we chatted about football, and he really took me under his wing and showed me, you know, how to behave but also how to play as well. And that really helped me, and that's how the whole Peterhead thing came about, really. It was pretty much through Lenny.
What was the standard like? Did you notice a difference between the juniors to playing in the Highland League?
I think at that point I was young, and I didn't notice a huge difference, if I'm honest with you, because I think at that point you're just a bit naive about it all. You've got no fear. You basically, you know, you just have no preconceptions about who you're playing against. You know, we played a few games. We played a Highland League Select one time. It was Keith against Highland League Select, and it was myself and Neil McRitchie that played up front, and we had a great game. I mean, we terrorised that game. We played really well because we had no fear. We didn't know who we were playing with. We just thought it was just another game. But I think, yeah, there was a difference when you played the more experienced teams. Like, if I remember back when I first ever played in the Highland League, I played for Cove. And I played when I was 15, and I was thrown in the deep end. Doug Rigby was the manager at the time, and I'd played against Peterhead on a reserve game on a Monday night, and I scored 3 goals and got taken off at half time. And Doug Rigby says, you're playing in the first team on Saturday. And I was like, I'm only 15 here. You know, I'm at school, and then I'm up, and we played Clack away. And that was when I realised the difference between men and boys. I mean, I got thrown around. I was really, really out my depth because these guys were physically stronger than me. And I remember coming away after that game thinking, I really need to be more physical, and I really need to make sure that the next time I do play in that league, I'm ready, because I wasn't. I mean, I was just a little boy, really. But yeah, the bigger teams, you definitely notice a difference.
Did you find you had to kind of, not physically, but sort of mentally, did you have to sort of grow up pretty quick, be smarter?
Yeah, you do. And when you go into that environment with the dressing room, it becomes pretty quick. You have to learn pretty quickly. And you've got a lot of experienced guys that will basically treat you the same as the older guys. And that in that dressing room at that time was brilliant for me, because I grew up very quickly, because there was no option not to. It was either you go with how it's going to be or you won't play. And that was really good, because the banter was brilliant, but the teaching and mentoring that all of them players did, they didn't force it on you, but you knew that you had to listen to them. And I was at that point where I wanted to learn and I wanted to listen. And yeah, it was a fantastic time.
It was almost a case of like sink or swim in the dressing room. You either went with it or that was basically it.
Yeah, it is. You either go with it or you're cast aside. And it can be quite cruel at times. It really can. And if you don't fit, it can be very difficult. And I've seen players that haven't fitted. Not that they're bad players, but they just maybe haven't fitted in the dressing room. And that's so important, I think. You know, making sure that the team spirit isn't affected by things.
Do you think a person's personality is just as important as their attributes as well as a player?
Yes, I think so. Yeah, I think so. I think your person, I mean, don't get me wrong, you will need a superstar that maybe doesn't have the best attitude, but I think at our level, you have to have the right personality to match your skills, because, you know, you spend a lot of time with everybody. You know, if you're on a bus for whatever it is, up to Wick or whatever, you have to get on with everybody. You know, you have to be able to have a beer and have a joke and have a laugh. And I think when I was with that Keith team, that was the case. Everybody got on. There was nobody in that team that didn't get on. And, you know, whilst we were in lockdown, we were due to meet up in April for a reunion. And, you know, what these things are like, reunions, and people didn't have other going, and people, now, out of the 18, we had 17 of the guys going, and the one guy that couldn't go lives in Australia. So that just shows you that...
What an excuse.
He's got a bit of an excuse. That just shows you that even to this day, we all get on, and there's that respect amongst us. So, yeah.
So moving on then, you're Dundee. Trials, were you on trial at Dundee, or how did that come about?
Yeah, so I'd been to a few clubs. I'd went down to Hearts. I'd played a couple of trial matches for Hearts. I'd been down and trained with them a few times. That was really difficult. That was a different... You talk about different standards. That was completely out of my... I was out of my depth. I mean, I considered myself a decent player at that point. And me and one of the guys that we played with, we went down to Edinburgh and we went into that dressing room. And that was a scary dressing room. I mean, you had guys from all over Scotland that had been there for maybe a year, and we were dropped in to go and play a tournament. That was tough. And we played Celtic, we played Kilmarnock and Dunfermline, and it was really difficult because we had never played with them before. You were dropped into this system and expected to play fantastically well. And we did okay. We got invited down to further training in Edinburgh, but I think I kind of knew that maybe was just a step up playing for Hearts, and that passed Preston. There was a thing with Preston. They phoned and asked if I'd be interested in going and speaking to them. And then Dundee came out of the blue later on. I had been playing for the school, and somebody came to a game, and then I was lucky enough to get selected for Scotland at that age. And then they came to a game, and they said, "Look, would you like to come down for some trials?" And we came up and down. It was actually St Johnston. They had all their trials. There's an Astro at McDermott. And we just went down and played a few games there. And they were really keen. They were like, "Look, we really want you to come and join." And I was like, "Well, yeah, I'm more than happy to." I had the option to go to America. That was another thing that was bubbling around. I got offered a scholarship in America, but that wasn't really what I wanted to do. And then Dundee were like, "Right, okay, let's go and please come and join us. We're going to pre-season, we're away to Ireland, here's all the details." And that was me, and I was happy. I was like, "That's fine, I'm going to give this the best shot I could." And then I played for Keith in a game that I shouldn't have, and I got injured. I went for a ball with a goalkeeper, and that's what I'm talking about, being naive and no fear. I should never, ever try to score that goal. And now, being the age I am, I can see that it was just stupid, because I chipped a bone in my ankle, broke, snapped all the ligaments, and that was a really serious injury. I still remember at the time, it was the Fraserburgh physio, and the Keith physio came on, and if they hadn't acted the way they had so quickly, I'd had a real problem. I might not never have played again. It was that bad. So, of course, that was me injured and couldn't go and play for Dundee. So that was it. But these things happen, don't they?
Did you know at the time it was a serious injury?
Yeah. I mean, the pain was just, it was ridiculous. It was really bad. It was one of those where I haven't had similar injuries, but you know you've done something bad. And it was a reaction of other people as well. And that's when I started worrying. But as I say, the reactions of the two physios were just incredible. They knew exactly what to do. So I was really fortunate that they were there.
How was the conversation with Dundee after that? Did they know prior to you telling them, or did you tell them, or how did it come about?
I think it was maybe my dad or maybe me that phoned them and just made them aware of the situation. And it was just one of those things. I mean, I think it was because it was pre-season. They probably weren't that bothered. But no, I think we just had to say, "Look, I've been injured," and we just sort of kept in touch. And then once I said to them that it was very serious, we kind of both knew that the age I was at, and having missed the whole of pre-season and missed some of the games, it wasn't going to work. So that ship sailed. And to be honest with you, I was okay with it. I was okay. Yeah, I was annoyed and disappointed, but you know, these things happen in football. You get injuries, and that just so happened that that's what happened to me, and I'm okay with it.
You still carried on playing for Keith though for another season, was it?
Yeah. So I came back. I was injured for a while, and then I came back. Yeah, and played for Keith, and then I obviously then I knew that I think at that point Alan Lyons had left to go to Peterhead with Ian Wilson, and I had decided that I wanted to go to Peterhead. I wanted to go and play in the Scottish League. That was my plan. And I always had an agreement with Keith that if a team higher up in the leagues came in for me, they would let me go for free. But that, I mean, it's not a long story, but that I ended up out of the game for a few months. Let's put it like that. And it got to the point where I wasn't playing for Keith at all. And I was sitting on the sidelines, not playing. And I wanted to go to Peterhead. And it got to the point where I think I actually phoned Sandy Stables and said, look, I really want to leave. I think I've done my time here in terms of I've played for the club. I've never caused any issues. I want to go and play for Peterhead. And it wasn't until February, I think, that we actually agreed for me to leave, which, you know, that looking back now, that was months of me not playing football. And at that age, I wanted to play. I wanted to have a game. So, you know, I thought what had happened was I'd been playing for Keith reserves. So I'd been put in the 21s. And that was me. I wasn't playing on a Saturday, but I was getting forced to play on a Monday. And I remember going and playing Peterhead. We played Peterhead. It would have been in February. And it was a Monday night. And I remember at the time, the physio, Keith, we got really well. Doc, his name was. And he said to me, he goes, this is your chance to actually get this over the line in terms of you play really well at night. It'll happen. And I remember, I think I actually came off at half-time, so I scored two in the first half, scored a header, and I remember coming inside, and I hit a shot outside my foot straight into the top corner. And it was one of those goals where you think, that's just lucky. But I remember at half-time, I was lying on the physio's bench, and I had a little bit of a niggle on my hamstring. It wasn't major, and I remember Doc whispering in my ear, he says, I think you've done enough, you better come off. I came off. I wasn't terribly injured, but I came off. And then right enough, by the Saturday, I think I was actually a Peterhead player. And I actually played on the Saturday and scored for Peterhead in my first game.
I was going to say, do you remember your debut? But you obviously do. So tell us about your goal then.
I do remember. It was strange because I obviously hadn't played first team football for a while. And I remember just going in there and I think what it was a bit of a weird one because I was actually, I think it was East Fife who were playing. I think it was East Fife. I've got it written down. I thought it was Dumbarton, but they weren't in our league. I think it was East Fife. And I remember going up in the bus and it was all very new and I knew a lot of the players. And I remember I didn't expect to play. I just thought I was going up to sit and watch. And I remember with 15 minutes to go, Ian and Lenny turned down and said, like, go and get warmed up. You're going on. And I was like, can't be going on. I said, I don't even know the players. I certainly don't know the level. And it was one of those where I remember the ball was down the left. And I think it might have been Andy Roddy. He shot or cut it back. And it was one of those where everybody's missed it. And I've just anticipated it. And it's arrived at my feet. And I've thought, I've just got to kick it. And it's one of those autopilot. And you think, I've just hit it and it's hit the net and I've kind of looked round and I think it was like 600-700 people at the time were at Peterhead, the fans, and I remember sort of that split second of actually realising it went in, and then everybody just sort of went nuts because obviously it was my first goal and I kind of was just, you know, in shock a bit. But yeah, I do remember it. I still remember it now. It was down at the bottom end. And I just remember after the game, my phone was just going nuts because at that point, obviously, all of my friends were probably in the pub on a Saturday afternoon and, you know, watching the scores coming in. And then my name comes up on Sky Sports News or Sky Sports and then they're all going daft. And yeah, it was really enjoyable.
Do you think it was better the fact that you were just thrown in? You didn't actually have time to think about it. You were just thrown in a quarter of an hour to go.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think it was. I didn't have to think about it because I thought, I was just going to sit there for the 90 minutes. But the fact is, it was like, right, on you go. And it was almost, you know, it was just, I don't know, it was just, it was like I had no time to think about what I was going to do. I just sort of took it in my stride and just went on. And I knew that if there was a chance, I was going to back myself to score. And it just so happens I was lucky enough to be in the right position.
In the back of your mind, do you think, oh, this league cup, this is easy, this?
No, I don't think I ever thought that. I mean, I think that was, there was a big difference. Do you know what the biggest difference was? And people might tell you this, but the biggest difference for me was the amount of goal-scoring chances you got in the league as opposed to playing the Highland League. You could play in the Highland League and you'd get a number of opportunities to score. You go into the Football League and there's very little. You've got to make your opportunity to even score the goal. That was the biggest thing for me, was the difference in the amount of chances that people created.
When you signed for Peterhead, was there an expectation of where the club was going? Because obviously they were just, 2 years into the league. Did they have any expectations of where they wanted to go? Did you get a vision of where they wanted to go?
Yeah, I do. I remember when I first signed, the plan was that the club was going to progress up the league system, and I was bought into it straight away. I remember when I signed, I wasn't interested in wage. I can't even remember I was even told what the wages were going to be or the sign-on fees. I just signed, and I remember that it was only like when we got paid at the end of the month, that's when I kind of found out, because I wasn't bothered. I just wanted to play for Peterhead, and I just wanted to play in the league. But I do remember at the time, there was obviously, it was impressive when you went up. You know, the stadium was really good. The facilities were fantastic. And the intention was to progress quite rapidly up the leagues. And they affiliated themselves with Dundee, which we'll come on to probably later. And, you know, that's the plan that they had. They were going to attract players from all over Scotland to come and play for Peterhead to get them up into the next stage of those leagues. But it was so difficult to get out of that league at that point, because there was always seemed to be another team which was on the same journey.
I think the signing of Ian Stewart was probably the first sort of sign that they wanted to progress.
Yeah, I mean, Stewarty was ridiculous. I mean, Stewarty was just a goal machine. I mean, I remember he played up for me. Also, it was me, Martin, MJ, and Stewarty. And I remember always thinking, how is he in the right position all the time? How is that guy always there? And the more we played with him, the more we realised how intelligent he was and how skillful he was at being at the right place at the right time. And, you know, it wasn't luck that he'd done that. He knew exactly what he was doing, and he scored all these fantastic goals. And that was a huge impact on me when I first went up, and I was like looking at Stewarty, and I was like, he was just banging in hat-tricks left, right and centre, and he was the standard. And, you know, even at training, that was the expectation and that was the standard that was set. And that was really good, really, you know, it was a professional standard, you know.
You had him, obviously. You mentioned Martin Johnson, Kevin Tindall was there as well. Some of the names that was in that squad. Was it maybe slightly disappointing that you didn't get promoted quicker?
Yeah, I think so. I think we were disappointed because we had such a strong squad, and we always seem to hit stages in the season where we just fell away a little bit. And I look back there, we finished fourth every year that I was there, but it felt we were better than that. And we always backed ourselves to win at Balmer. We always thought that whoever we played at Balmer, we had a chance. It was only when we started travelling away, which was maybe our downfall at times, but we had a decent team. We really did. We had a really good team of proper professionals, but we also had a good mix of young guys coming in as well.
And a guy like Ian Wilson as manager as well, with his experience, he could have probably managed anywhere in that league. And I'm not just talking Division 3, but, you know, Division 1, Division 2.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was a great manager. I mean, just, you know, training was top class. Him and Lenny got on so great. They were, you know, such a formidable management team, but also the knowledge and the experience and knowing how to do things. And, you know, it was just that level of professionalism that was different to the Highland League. You know, that's something I was on, on you know, not used to, but it just started right from the word go. You know, like pre-season training, it was done professionally. So we were a professional team playing in the third division, if that makes sense.
Yeah. How disappointed were you when Wilson did leave?
Yeah, I think we were all disappointed. You know, I think we had such a good team together of players that had grown up through that team, if that makes sense. And it's always difficult when a manager leaves because, you know, you have been purchased by that manager or he's your manager. And, you know, when people start moving around and stuff, then it's always difficult. But, you know, that's the management game, is it? You know, some people move on, some people come in, they create opportunities for other people. And yeah, I mean, listen, I think at the time when I eventually left, you know, I was open and honest with Ian, and he was fantastic and fully understood my situation as well.
When Ian Shearer took over, did you kind of notice a difference in him? Did he sort of step back slightly from you know, being a teammate and such?
Well, yes. I mean, I left not long after. I mean, I left not long after Ian had left. I think I'm trying to think back now. But Stuart, being a manager, I think Stuart was always going to be a manager, if that makes sense. Do you know what I mean? He always had that, you know, you can see certain players that you know is going to be a manager and some players that are not going to be a manager. And I think Stuart was always going to be that guy because he was always studying training and he was always doing his own training. And, you know, I think back some summers he would put on his own little training camps and stuff and keep people fit and stuff. And I think it was always a natural progression that he was going to do that. And yeah, I think once I left, it was funny because my brother then started playing for Peterhead. So he was then managing, Stuart, he was then managing him as well. So it was interesting to see how that transitioned as well. But yeah.
Well, he did well. He obviously got Peterhead promoted. I think it was his first full season. And yeah. I think if it hadn't been for Gretna and the money machine that was Gretna at the time, I think we probably would have won the league.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, that was the thing with Gretna, because they were coming right through the leagues at that point, and we couldn't compete with them because they were buying players from, you know, the Premier League. Now, you know, it just wouldn't work. I mean, we played Gretna right from back when I first joined, and the change in their team was incredible because we used to go down to Gretna expecting to maybe beat them, or when they came up to Balmer, you would have a good chance of beating them. But as they started spending all this money, it was so difficult to compete. You know, they had guys like David Bingham were playing, and Kenny Duker was up front, and, you know, these are guys that should have played in the Premier League. Do you know what I mean? It was almost not fair at times, and I think they were also training full time. We had jobs.
Yeah. Right. We'd like maybe to be able to compete with that Gretna team, though, in any other divisions below the Premier League.
No, they just had that target, didn't they? And they obviously had the backing and the financial power to do that, and they just steamrolled everybody. And certainly Peterhead, we had a successful group of players, but, you know, you kind of knew when you were going to play them that it was going to be a real struggle.
Yeah.
Because it's not only the star players they had, they also had a lot of other players in that squad that were also probably getting paid quite a lot of money, but shouldn't have been playing in that league, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And obviously, in a weird way, it was successful, but obviously long-term, it wasn't successful because obviously they disappeared out of the league just as quick as they came in. So maybe that's not the example we should be setting. But we hear Peterhead's obviously a well-run club. Was that kind of the feeling back then as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was a professional. I mean, it still is a professionally run club, and everything was done properly. And, you know, it was a real step up for me going from the Highland League to the Scottish leagues that everything was done correctly. You know, even little things like we would go and stay away before a match. Now, I would never do that. I mean, even when we were going up and playing Wick, we would leave at like 6 o'clock in the morning to go and play the game and then get home at like 2 a.m. Now, that just doesn't work. Whereas with Peterhead, we would go down and stay overnight in Glasgow on the Friday, which prepared us for the next match. Now, that just shows you the level that, that we were at that point. You know, we were going and staying, and it was quite often that we would be staying in the same hotel as Dundee, whoever. You know, you'd bump into the Dundee players at pre-match because they were going away and playing Rangers or whatever. Peterhead, we were aligning ourselves with them in terms of preparation. So that shows you how prepared we were for going to play like Morton and all these teams. And, you know, when we went down and played Gretna, we left on the Friday morning to go down and play Gretna. We stayed in a hotel and everything was just done properly.
Does that include training as well? Because I'd imagine training would have been as good as anything.
Training was brilliant. Training was so good. I really enjoyed training. It was exceptional. It really was. We had a few places where we trained. We obviously trained up in Peterhead. We trained down the beach, and it was just good fun. I loved training at that point. In that stage, I just loved it. It was obviously different when we had that. We started to have this affiliation with Dundee at the time, and I don't know if you remember it, but there was a lot of loan players started to come to Dundee, come to Peterhead, and there was a huge influx of, you know, there used to be like a big bus that came up from Dundee with all the Dundee players. And at that point, that's when it started feeling a bit different for me, because we had the Aberdeen guys that were really close-knit, and then you had the Dundee guys that sometimes you wouldn't see all week. They would maybe train on their own, and then you would just turn up on a Saturday, and then they would play. And that was when it started becoming a bit different. We used to go down on a Monday night and play Dundee, which was brutal. I've been working all day, and then, I mean, some of the players we played, I was looking earlier, they used to have the guy, you know, the guy Spironi that was at Crystal Palace?
Oh, a keeper, yeah.
He played in goals. So on Monday night, by the way. So you had him, you had the guy, Brent Sancho, the centre-half, so I'm playing against him. You had Nacho Novo, you had the guy Caballero that played for Arsenal. Juan Sara was their big centre-forward. So if they hadn't had a game at the weekend, they played on the Monday. Now, it was an absolute nightmare chasing them around. And this is at Dens Park, by the way. This is not just a little pitch. This is a massive Premier League pitch. And we're having to run after these guys on Monday night. And that was regular. You know, that was us going down to Dundee and playing them on a Monday night. That was so tough. That was really difficult.
But it's slightly different for playing Wick.
yeah, it was. And you know what? It was enjoyable at the time, but it felt like you had no chance in terms of these guys were professional players that had played at sometimes international football. And that's a huge different ball game from, you know, playing in the third division. Do you know what I mean? And that was when, you know, there was a huge influx of Dundee players, and there was guys, we actually had a couple of guys from Ayrshire that played for Peterhead at that time. And of course, you never saw them during the week because they never trained with us. They trained in Stirling or whatever. And that was different from when I would play in the Highland League, because everybody was together. Everybody was at training. It was slightly different at Peterhead at that point.
Are you surprised that Peterhead hasn't managed to get to the second tier of the Scottish game?
Yeah, I think so. I think with the players they've had and, you know, the opportunities, I am surprised. But then I also remember back how difficult it is at that level, because it's so competitive. It's a little bit like, you know, the Championship in England. It's a battle to get out of that division. It's very much a battle to get out of these divisions as well. And, you know, you look at what Cove's done, it's absolutely ridiculous the way that they've just transitioned through it seamlessly. And Peterhead will get there, you know, I'm sure of that, but it's just so difficult because the standard's very similar, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think even just looking at this season or the coming season, you know, there's Falkirk, there's Partick Thistle, there's Airdrie, there's full-time teams in there, and it's probably going to be just as competitive as the Championship is.
Yeah, that's the difficulty. It comes to a point where you've got the full-time clubs and the part-time clubs, and that's a huge difference than if you're working all week and then having to play against guys that are training all week. That's a huge difference. But listen, there's some fantastic players at Peterhead, and, you know, it's a fantastic club. And, you know, it would be fantastic for them to transition up through the leagues like Cove.
in your early days, was there any sort of indication or was there any sort of discussions that they might go full-time at some point, or was that sort of way, way off in the distance?
I think that was something that was a plan. I think certainly that's what they wanted to do. I think we had to get out of those leagues first. And I think, listen, I think it's quite clear that we were that level at that point. So that was kind of that was our job, was to get out of that league. And then the plan would probably have been to then replace us with guys that would have been able to go then full time and stuff. So I think it was quite clear that the club had a huge ambition to do that. And they've got the setup to do it as well. You know, it's just getting that luck at times.
Yeah, and it comes to that. I mean, there's a couple of occasions where it's the playoff games, it's let them down.
Yeah.
Getting into the second tier, and it's just getting over that little hurdle.
Yeah. I mean, we played Morton, and I still remember it. We played Morton last game of the season down in Morton, and if you look at the table, we actually finished fourth, but had we won that game, we would have been promoted. And I remember the game, there was something like 7,000 people at a game, right? It was absolutely ridiculous, because I don't think Celtic were playing at home and I don't think Rangers were playing at home, so everybody went to the Morton game. And I remember going out, and it was this sort of like party festival atmosphere, and it was just ridiculous. And it was basically a playoff. Morton to win the league or us to get promoted. And it was one of those, and I think we got beat in the end. I mean, they were just too good in the end. I think it was 2-0 or 2-1 or something. But it was proper feisty. I remember there was a wee dust up on the touchline as well. Lenny and Ian probably wouldn't like me telling everybody, but the ball went into their dugout, I think it was, and one of our, I think it might have been Ian, went in and tried to get the ball out of their dugout. So you know what happens? It's the traditional, you're not getting the ball back. And yeah. I think it ended up with like our bench, their bench, our subs, our people that weren't even playing, all on the touchline. And there was this fantastic picture in, I think it was a Daily Record on Monday, of this like full-on brawl. So I'd love to see if we could try and find that picture, because that summed up that game, because it was pretty much the playoff for the season. And we ended up losing. And I remember being in the dressing room afterwards, and they sent the helicopter down, I think, on the pitch with the trophy. And it was just, yeah, it was disappointing. But that season, we genuinely felt like, you know, that was our opportunity to get up, and to miss by a point or something. It was a tough one to take. It really was.
Makes it worse, because it's a point. If it'd been like 10 points away, you wouldn't have bothered. But because it's that one point, you start going through the fixtures. Could we have picked up a point here, or have we not lost that goal there? You start questioning things, don't you?
Yeah, you look at refereeing decisions, and you look at penalties, and you look at things that we could have had, and chances we maybe missed. But you know, that goes back to what I said at the start. It's about what's for you, and you know, that just wasn't our time, and they were just a better team, and it was tough to take that one. And I still remember we had a big party organised back at the hotel, and I remember being back there, and it wasn't good. It was a downer. You know what I mean? You'd contributed so much to that season, and for it to end just in that one game, it was tough. It was a real tough one to take, that one.
Before we sort of finish on your Peter Heath time, then a lot of big personalities you played with. What was the dressing room like at that time?
Dressing room was brilliant. It was really good fun. We had some really big characters throughout our time. And, you know, I think when we sort of first joined, we had a real good team spirit. Certainly, I mean, there was a lot of Aberdeen guys that, you know, Stuarty, and then with guys like Greg Smith, Ross Buchanan, myself, MJ, Kevin Bizet. You know, we got on really well, because we were all the same kind of age, and we all were, you know, friendly. We all got on, and I really enjoyed that. That was really good. And then you also throw in guys like Robbie Rayside into the mix, who was just, you know, fantastic for the dressing room. You had Tyndall, who was just brilliant. You know, he set that benchmark of, this is what's expected, and anything less than that is just not good enough. And Tins was great. And, you know, I remember, I'll tell you a funny story. So we played East Stirling. I'm not sure. Yeah, I'll be all right to tell this story, but we played East Stirling. We played East Stirling away. I just looked it up, but it was in April, and it was towards the end of the season, and East Stirling Shire at that point were bottom of the league by miles, and they'd let in all these goals, and they'd lost all their games, and we went down to play them. And I remember on the way down the bus, somebody had mentioned the odds for us to win the game was quite favourable. So I won't name any names, but there was a little bit of a kitty formed, shall I say. And it got to the point where we were getting beat 1-0, believe it or not. And it was 0-0 at half time, and the pitch was horrendous. It was brick hard. It was summer. It was end of season, and we were getting beat 1-0. And I remember you could see the guys that had put money on it because they were playing up front. And I think we had Paul Mathers in goals, and everybody else was up front. And I remember at the time thinking, I'm playing up front, but what are these guys doing up here? It got up to the point, we did equalise. We equalised in the 89th minute. Robbie Rayside scored. And I'm not joking. See, the last like 3 or 4 minutes, it was incredible because everybody was in the East Stirlingshire box trying to get a winner. And it turned out that we didn't beat him. We drew 1-1. So we found it pretty funny on the bus, the guys that weren't involved in it, because we just thought it was hilarious. But yeah, that's the sort of things that happened. And there was loads of banter on the bus. The banter was fantastic, playing all the card games. Just your general football chat. It was just really, really good fun.
I know you're not playing anymore, but do you think that kind of, as you say, the banter and things like that, is that kind of disappeared the game slightly, do you think?
I think so. I think when I came to sort of the end of my career, I think it was a bit different. I don't see the guys socialising maybe as much. I don't see that sort of camaraderie maybe. I mean, I might be wrong. I mean, I haven't been involved in it for a while, but I certainly, you know, somebody said to me right at the start, it was like a team that drinks together wins together. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. You know, the guys that go out for a pint on a Saturday and really enjoy each other's company tend to be a successful team, or at least are at the top end of the league. And I think that's maybe something that we struggled with at Peterhead, was that a lot of the guys were all over Scotland, and we dropped a guy off in Stirling and Ayrshire and Dundee, and there was not really that camaraderie of a night out. I mean, we went out in Peterhead a few times, but it only really ended up just being Aberdeen boys, and the odd, maybe Tins was there for a bit, and the rest of the guys would just go home, whereas we would absolutely love it. You know, play the game, go out in the Peterhead, have a few beers, and, you know, crash at somebody's house, and then just end up getting a bus back to Aberdeen the next day or something. I think that's maybe missing a little bit.
Yeah. So, final question then. Do you still kind of keep an eye on what's happening in Peterhead? Do you keep an ear out?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah. I mean, it's one of the first teams I look for on a Saturday. You know, I always look at it. I always, you know, want to go back, and you know, if I'm ever up in the area, I always, you know, I'll try and go past and have a look. And you know, if they're on, you know, when they're on the TV, it's always good to remember some of the games. And you know, somebody sent me a few photographs not long ago, and it was just actually good to look back and look at the games. You know, we played Aberdeen and things like that, and it was just great. And I always look out for it. You know, it's a special time, because I made a lot of good friends there, and that's, you know, so important, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's go on to your post-football career then. As I said at the beginning, it's a fascinating story. You're sort of a meet in the media game now. How did that sort of come about, and when did that start?
It was a funny one, actually. It was one of those where as I said about the Dundee thing, I needed to get a job, and I wanted to remain in the football industry if I could. And I knew of a company in Aberdeen that worked for the SFA and UEFA and FIFA, and I knew that company, and I basically just wanted to work there. I was, you know, desperate to get in the door, and you know, an opportunity came up, and I just grabbed it, and I said, look, I want to go and work here. And I think at the time I was making cups of tea and coffee and stuff, and just doing anything anybody wanted. And within about 6 months, because I think I had that football knowledge. I was working within that environment. I think that Brian at the time, my boss, and Leslie, they were like, we really see some potential in you. Would you like to sort of further your career and try and learn how to operate a camera and edit and things like that? And that sort of coincided, that happened when I was at Peterhead. And I remember at the time, I phoned Ian and I said, look, Ian, I wonder if we could meet and have a little small chat. And we met and I was honest with him. I said, look, I've been offered this change of role. It'll mean that I'll have to travel abroad. It'll mean that I'll probably not be training every now and again, and I might not be able to commit to it as much as I could. And at that point, I decided that I was going to make more money as a career, as a job, than I would playing football. And that's when I kind of realised myself that it was going to be different. I was going to have to not be as committed to the football as I was. And that was a shame because I really enjoyed being at Peterhead. And as soon as I took that new role, I kind of knew that was the beginning of the end of it, if that makes sense. And I was okay with it, but I just wished that I could maybe have stayed a little bit longer. But hey, listen, that was it. And then after that, you know, I trained and did sort of kind of an apprenticeship and learned how to operate a TV camera and edit. And from there, you know, within 6 months, I was down in Glasgow at the Champions League final. You know, and it depended, Real Madrid, Bayer Leverkusen, and you know, I was like, wow, this is quite different to what I was used to. So although I wasn't on the pitch, I was like 5 yards from the pitch. So to me, it was just as good. It was doing something that I loved, and I was there, you know, appreciating these world-class players. So, yeah.
Do you still get the sense of the excitement, although, as you said, you're behind the camera, but do you still feel that excitement being in the games?
Yeah, you do. You definitely do. It's the thing that gets you as a fans. You know, it's you're so close to the pitch. It's hard to describe. It's like you're almost on the pitch, and there's certain clubs and fans that it's just completely different. You know, for example, Barcelona is just crazy. Their fans are just unbelievable, their songs. I remember I went to the Juventus AC Milan game at Old Trafford. That was some atmosphere. I mean, the Juventus fans were just unbelievable with their noise. And that's the bit that gets you, I think. You're focused on doing your job and you're focused on filming these world-class players, but it's the atmosphere that really hits you and the noise. And yeah, it's pretty special. It's pretty unique.
Yeah, you mentioned the 2002 Champions League final. It's up there with one of the better Champions League final, but to be your first sort of gig, were you kind of pinching yourself at the time?
I wasn't pinching myself. it was something else, I think. it was very, very nervy because that was my first real experience. And it was just one of those, it was a surreal day. I mean, I remember going to the Hilton in Glasgow because that was the main headquarters, and you'd just like world famous football players walking around the sort of foyer. And I'd be sitting there going, hang on, that's Thingy, and that's Alex Ferguson there, and that's, you know, whoever, and you're like, this is just weird. But then you go to the match and you're there to do a job, so you kind of switch to that match mode, and that's your kind of job. But yeah, it was pretty special. I mean, obviously one of our remits was to follow players and follow referees and try and do that sort of behind the scenes film. And you know, you talk about luck, like earlier, I was lucky that I had decided to film Zidane when he scored. You know, that was one of those, you know, it was pure luck. You know, it was one of those player cam moments. And I remember filming it. So I actually hadn't seen the goal until I was back at the hotel. So I knew it was a good goal, but I didn't know how good it was until I watched the news and I was like, oh, hang on a minute, that's unbelievable. So that was pretty special. You can actually see me in the replay if you look really closely. You can see when you see the replay, I'm just over his shoulder, which is quite funny.
Well, look out for that. Is it difficult to be sort of player calm then? Because I think you'd be sort of wanting to watch the game as normal, but you're obviously just fixated on one player.
I took it quite easy, I think, because I understood football and I played football, and I could kind of work out what they were going to do in terms of, I knew the flow. in terms of, I knew if they were going to play it out from the back, they were going to pass it along the back. So it was easy to work out the way they were going to play. So that really helped me, because you see some people that maybe don't have a background in football, and you know, they cut between things and they don't really know. So you're always trying to second guess that, especially if you're tight on a player camp. You don't really know what else is around. So you've got to have a real understanding of where the ball potentially might go next. But yeah, once you get the hang of it, it's relatively straightforward.
Is the Dan goal up there with one of the better ones that you filmed then? Or is it the better one?
It's what, sorry?
Is it the best one then?
It's probably up there. I mean, I'm trying to think. There's been so many other ones. I mean, I was fortunate enough. I think I did 30 games of the 2006 World Cup in Germany. So I'm trying to think back. Some of the goals there were incredible. I was obviously in South Africa for a lot of games as well. But I think Zidane, yeah. The goal I really liked was with Iniesta's goal in South Africa to win the World Cup was pretty special, because it was just that I think it was probably one of my favourite World Cups, and I just really enjoyed it, and I just respected, you know, I just loved how Iniesta played, and it was kind of fitting that he'd scored that goal to win it, and especially the way the final had been, where Holland basically just tried to kick him off the pitch, and for me that was football winning. It was the football team that won that game, and for him to score it, that was probably one of my favourites.
Yeah, and I think that was kind of the icing on the cake of that sort of period of Spanish domination.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they just were an unbelievable team, weren't they? I mean, I think I'd went to most of their games throughout the tournament, and they were just miles ahead of everybody, and it doesn't matter who played. I mean, their bench was frightening as well.
You could have had two or three different teams. Even the players that weren't picked in the squad, you'd be scratching your head thinking, why were they in the end? But yeah. I guess that was just the depth that they had at the time. As you said, you mentioned the 2006 World Cup, the 2010 World Cup, Champions Leagues. Do you still get the same kind of buzz now as you did when you first started?
Yeah, I do. I absolutely do. You know, last year I was in France for the Women's World Cup, which was brilliant. The year before that, I was at the World Cup in Russia, which was completely different. I was doing a different role. I was working with the VAR, so that was completely different for me as well. So I wasn't actually at any of the games. I was stuck in a bunker. You know, you probably saw that little box on the TV with the referees in it. That's where I was for the whole tournament. So that was completely different. But again, I absolutely loved it. I love football. You know, to have that opportunity to go to Moscow for 6 or 7 weeks, it's just, you know, to me it's not really a job. I love doing it, and you know, I think the one thing that I've been able to gather is experience of these events. You know, I've been to so many now that it doesn't faze you as much. You know, I think when you go to your first major tournament, it's quite a big shock. And there's a lot of things you have to learn. There's a lot of things you can't do. But as you go through them and as you go to different ones, you just become used to you become used to the fanfare, and nothing really fazes you anymore, you know? Just little things like, I remember in Moscow, I mean, you would just bump into random people. You know, I remember at halftime one of the games, you'd go to the toilet and Ancelotti was standing in the toilet. And you'd be like, it's a bit bizarre, but you just go back to the second half and think, was Ancelotti in the toilet there? And, you know, it's just things like that. It's just bizarre at times. You know, you come home and tell people, and they're like, "Are you actually telling the truth?"
There's a social faux pas. Do you introduce yourself at the end, or you just sort of go on what you're doing and get it?
I think I was in a rush. I mean, if we'd been in a bar or something, I probably would have given him a big bear hug or something and bought him a pint. But at that point, it wasn't appropriate, I don't think.
No. You mentioned the Women's World Cup last year, then Scotland obviously were there. How impressed were you with Scotland?
I was. You know what? I never actually went to any Scotland games. I was so annoyed because we were sent all over France and we went to all these different cities, and we were in Nice, and the day we left, Scotland arrived. So I never actually got to go into any of the games, but we obviously watched them all. And, you know, the games were great. You know, I think the games that we went to, the standard was so impressive. You know, I mean, we went to all the USA games and I remember watching them warming up and things, and it was just amazing. I mean, it really was. The standard was just frightening, really, really frightening. And it was just a really enjoyable World Cup, and it was friendly. Everybody got on, all the fans mixed, and, you know, the weather was just unreal. It was actually too hot at times. You know, I mean, from being up in the north of Scotland, I think we melted most of the time. I mean, the camera stopped working at one point in Leon because it was too hot. And I went out for a couple of runs in Leon, and I remember it was just absolutely roasting. It was like late high 30s in times, and I was thinking, how can these players play in that heat? It was just, you know, for the camera to stop working at the side of a pitch, it has to be a certain heat. And this was during the match, and they're running around playing 90 minutes. So, yeah, I was really impressed with the whole tournament. I was impressed with Scotland, and it was just great. I'd been to a few of the Women's World Cups, and they're always really, really good events.
Do you think the standard in the women's games is improving year on year?
Yeah, definitely do. I mean, obviously the USA team have set that benchmark of, you know, they are the best team by a mile. You know, Japan obviously have that standard of being up at that level. But you start seeing the European teams now doing a lot better. You know, Holland have got a lot of players now playing in the English leagues. England are obviously very good. Scotland now have players playing in all these big leagues as well. So it is definitely improving. And I think, you know, the people that watched the games, they really enjoyed watching them. And there were some unbelievable goals. I mean, the French team were brilliant. Really, really good. So, yeah, standards definitely improving year on year.
Yeah. I'm going to bring something up, and I don't know if you're going to like it or not, but being an Arsenal fan, then, did the Champions League final give you some mixed emotions? Being there, yeah. Obviously, watching Arsenal lose...
Yeah, it wasn't easy, I can tell you that. It wasn't easy. Yeah, it was a bit of a blow, I have to admit. I mean, I'm a big Arsenal fan, everybody knows that. And listen, it was one of those where the better team probably did win. You know, looking back, you know, Lehmann was sent off. Was it Lehmann? Yeah, Lehmann was sent off after like 18 minutes or something, and it ruined the game. It really did, but you know, I actually watched the highlights back not long ago. It was on BT, I think it was, and I watched it. And the amount of chances we had with 10 men was absolutely ridiculous because we actually played pretty well. And it wasn't until, you know, they changed things and put Larsson on and, you know, it really, really changed. But we had a chance. You know, we really had a good chance. And I just wonder if it was 11-11, what would have happened? But, I mean, you look at the teams they had, the players they had, and I mean, Messi didn't play. You know, Henri was obviously in his heyday. You know, that probably was one of those ones that got away. But in terms of the event as well, it was good. It was a really good match. But it was, I don't know if you remember, but it was absolutely chucking it down with rain, and got absolutely soaked. So I was at the end where all the goals were, and I remember when Belletti rolled in that winner. He was literally like a yard in front of me. And I mean, I'm actually like, look, I'm not angry, but I'm like obviously disappointed because he scored. And they're like screaming and everything like right in front of me. And I'm like, this is rubbing it in. You know what I mean? It's like I'm watching them and they're like screaming and everything. I was like, ah, fair play. So that was 2-1. But that was the night. Now, I remember the fans, the Barcelona fans that night. That was when it was like one of those atmospheres that you were like, this is a proper football match.
You were trying to be as professional as you could. You weren't going to try and kick him or anything, were you?
No, it's one of those match modes, isn't it? You just get into that. You're there for a job, but don't get me wrong. I'd have loved Arsenal to win, but it was. I'm a football fan, and I like Barcelona, and I loved at the time where, you know, they'd Ronaldinho and Deco and all these players, and I'd watched them on the TV, so I was just as excited to see Barcelona as I was Arsenal. And, you know, I remember watching the warm-up, Ronaldinho, and I think it was Deco, they basically warmed up themselves. You've probably seen it on YouTube and everything, but they basically just did keep you up and zinged the ball 30 yards to each other, and they would just control it on their chest and zing it back, and the ball wouldn't drop. And I remember looking at him going, is this what they do every game? This is like a Champions League final, and they're not doing a warm-up, they're just doing keepy-uppy. And it was just, yeah, they were a proper team.
Yeah, look back where you're at now and to that injury that you picked up, and you think, if I hadn't got that injury, what might have been?
No, I don't. I wouldn't change it. I absolutely wouldn't change it. These things happen, and you know, you look at, you know, had I went to Dundee, I think they went into administration as well. Not long after I would have been there, and that would have thrown up a lot of different problems. And, I mean, maybe I would have went to Dundee and might have got a different club, or I might have moved on. But listen, I wouldn't change anything. I'm happy with what happened. I'm delighted with the Highland League. Delighted playing for Peterhead, delighted for those experiences that I had, and no, I wouldn't change it at all.
Well, Keith, it's a fascinating story, as I said at the beginning. We could chat all night. It's been great reminiscing about Peterhead, hearing about your stories post football as well. It's just been great having you on. Thanks for coming.
That's okay. The only thing I want to mention, or that they should mention, is a lot of people that message me and talk about the goal against Stirling Albion, and people might not remember, but the only reason I shot that day was because I didn't want to pass it to Boney, because he'd already scored. Yeah, I was already knackered, so that was the reason I shot from like 45 yards. It wasn't because I saw the goalie off his line, I just was knackered and didn't want to pass it to Boney. But I always get that random message every now and again. People say, "Oh, you remember that goal?" I'm like, "Yeah, it was a fun night."
One final thing, and you and some of the lads just a few months ago were raising some money for the MND. Tell us about that and how that came about.
Yeah, that was about a month ago now. So Martin Johnston, you know, our former teammate and friend, you know, was obviously diagnosed with MND in August, and you know, it's something that you know, I wanted to help, and there's something that, you know, a lot of the former players wanted to help with, and we wanted to do some kind of event or football match, or, and obviously with COVID and lockdown, nothing was possible. So it was just one night, it was one Saturday night, I was sitting at home and I'd seen some other clubs doing this 24-hour challenge, and I thought, I'm just going to message MJ. So I messaged him. I says, "Look, this might be totally random, but do you fancy doing this running challenge?" And he's like, "Aye, let's go for it." I go, "Well, why don't we just do it? Raise as much money as we can for your charity, you know, MND Scotland, the My Doddy Foundation is the charity that Martin's supporting." And we were like, "Well, let's do it." So that night, it was about 11 o'clock on a Saturday night, I started messaging people that I knew, and I think by the morning, we had half the team already done. And, you know, 12 of the 24 had signed up. And I then went to some of the guys that I knew other clubs and said, "Look, would you get two or three guys together from Forest? Would you get two or three guys from Fraser Bros? The Brockers did it." And, you know, the main nucleus was the Peterhead team. You know, the Peterhead team that we had, and some of the guys at that point were, you know, with injuries and stuff, couldn't run, but they wanted to help. And I think we had Lenny, obviously, did one. Ian Wilson did one. Tyndall and Cooper, they did one. And, you know, it was a real Peterhead ex-player team. And, you know, we ended up getting 24 guys doing the run. And it was just brilliant. It was so much fun. We raised so much money. The generosity from, you know, across the whole of the north of Scotland and beyond. It was absolutely ridiculous. I couldn't believe the generosity of people. You know, we raised almost £13,000 in about 10 days. And it was like being back in the dressing room. You know, we started a WhatsApp group and it was just so much fun. I mean, the banter was flying because we all used to play against each other. And, you know, there was quite a strong Elgin nucleus as well. So it wasn't until we started looking back at some of the games that we all played against each other. Peterhead against Elgin. I think there must have been about 8 or 9 or 10 of us that played in those games, and there was quite a lot of history there. I don't know if you remember, but there was a certain incident in one of the Scottish Cup games where it was the 90th minute and one of their players smashed me in the face in the box, and the linesman saw it and gave a penalty. Now, this was the Scottish Cup third round, I think it was. So this was the big one to get into the draw. And they gave a penalty, and Coops scored it to win. And Elgin went nuts, like proper nuts. And their manager went absolutely crazy. I remember the next day, I was in the Bobbin Mill having a pint with my friends after it. And I remember the reporters were phoning saying, can you give me a response to the story? Can you give me a response to the story? And I was like, what story? And it was all over the papers that I was a cheat and I was this and all this. And I was like, I had never experienced this. I mean, I'd only experienced the P&J and the Press and Journal talking about games. I hadn't seen the Daily Record and the Sun writing about all this stuff. So I remember the next time we played Elgin, it was pretty bad up in Borough Briggs. I mean, people were not happy. The fans were really, really unhappy with the way we behaved. But yeah, so it was funny looking back because a lot of the players in the running challenge, we'd played against each other, but it was great. Mark Perry actually beat everybody, which was absolutely, I don't know if he saw the times in that, but obviously Fred played with us at Peterhead and he's 49 at the moment and he got the 3 o'clock till 4 o'clock in the morning slot and he ran 14 and a half kilometres, I think it was, which is absolutely mental. Bearing in mind that he also had a round of golf that day and had been up Scully Hill. So he beat some players that are still playing in the Highland League and the Scottish League. So it was really good. And we all want to try and get a reunion together so that we can go out and have a drink and remember the good times of playing football. So it was really good. And I think we want to try and do some more events as well coming up. But the main thing was raising as much money as we could.
Is it just showing how much support there was that within, as you said, one evening, 11 o'clock at night, you're sending out a message and how quick everybody responded, everybody was willing to rally around?
Yeah, it was amazing. It really was. Every single person we asked wanted to do it. And to be honest with you, we probably could have had 3 or 4 squads doing it because there was so many guys that had messaged to say, can we get involved? Can we do an hour? Can we do this? And you know, it was difficult saying no because, you know, I mean, it was some really, really like big names wanting to join. And I was like, well, we're full up, but we're having there might be a football game or there might be a dinner or whatever. But I think the fact that everybody just wanted to do something, you know, I spoke to guys, you know, I spoke to Stuart Soane, who played for Peterhead as well. Soane, I messaged him and said, look, do you want to do it? And he's like, absolutely, just tell me what it is, I'm going to do it. And I said, would you get a couple of other Forest guys? He's like, yeah, no problem, I'll get some more Forest guys. And that was the sort of, you know, it wasn't word of mouth, it was like, look, would you do it? Yes. And then their guy that played with MJ and played against MJ, they all did it as well. So, and it was actually good fun. I know it was an hour running, and you know, we used to be athletes, we're not athletes anymore. Well, some of us aren't athletes, so that was all. Well, yeah, I mean, Fred could probably still play, but it was fun because then everybody's like spurring each other on and motivating and saying, "Oh, go on, do it!" And we all did the videos, and it was just brilliant, brilliant fun. It was just even in the week leading up to the event on the Saturday, it was like being in a dressing room every single day, and you know, it was like I was finding myself at night like laughing. You know, I'm on the phone and I'm laughing at the messages and the text messages and the photographs and. It was just like being in that dressing room, but having like nine or 10 different clubs' dressing rooms in the same chat. So it was really good. It was really good fun.
Can you imagine if you had social media when you were playing?
Oh, I could, it's weird actually thinking about that because there would have been some probably stories on there, I would imagine.
Those stories I think might be for another time.
Yeah, there is a few stories that we won't go into. There's a few end of season stories that we certainly won't mention on this show, but yeah. Maybe for another time.
For another time. Well, Keith, again, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. Loved it, and it's been brilliant. Thanks for coming on.
No, thank you. And you know, listen, thanks for inviting me on. It's absolutely great. You know, I love Peterhead, and yeah, good luck with it all.
Cheers. Thank you very much, Keith.
A huge thank you to Keith for taking the time to join us for what turned out to be a very interesting discussion. Our thanks also go to our sponsor, Marco's Chipper, and as always, a big thank you to you guys for listening. That's it for this week. We'll be back again very soon. Cheers.